We're holding on your Dalodoma Bays, 9 lines from the bottom. About 2 dots with no base. So the Mishnah had mentioned, a bunch of brief statements, each of which teaches us some din about Nezikin. One of them is that the shum, the valuation of the moment, the value of the damage, has to be bifnei based. So we must start by saying, so that comes to a case, for example, where bifnei beisdin, well, the Gemara is assuming that bifnei beisdin is continuing from the word shava kesef. We said shum kesef, so that's been evaluation based on shava kesef. We said yesterday shava kesef means that beisdin arranges to get collected from, to get it collected. Yeshua, possibly this is happening in the other room, maybe. We're learning over here. Okay, we'll manage as best we can. Is it possible maybe to dive in there since we're learning over here? Well, I'm asking if you can dive in out there. I mean, right now they're not doing anything out there, are they? They're learning upstairs, but they're not doing anything out here. So at this point, we're assuming that bifnei beisdin is continuing from the word shava kesef. Beisdin arranges for a payment using shava kesef, meaning using money, using land rather. And therefore, that has to be bifnei beisdin, implying that when beisdin, that beisdin, that the land still was in his property in the presence of beisdin. Therefore, prapor mocha nechasav, so this would come to exclude the case where somebody sold his property, v'achak acholach beisdin, and only then he goes to beisdin, where then at that point the money's already been spent. Now at that point, you should argue, shouldn't beisdin collect on behalf of the nizek from the buyers of the property? So we're saying at this point that no. The problem with that is...
Are you davening at 9-ish or 9:30?
9:30. So, but you, when you daven, if you don't mind, also... Okay, the problem with that is that shmamino, does that mean that we can prove from that loiva, that what if you were to say a parallel case with somebody who borrows money, and then he sells in the and then he comes to Basin with the money already having been spent in Basin, Graven Lemahem, why wouldn't Basin collect from the Nechasim? When it comes to a milveh, there's a shibud on the karka. Why should it be any different over here? Tosfos discusses a little bit that maybe the Gemara might have had a reason to argue there is a difference. There's a difference between a milveh where there's a shtar versus a zikin where there's not. That's what we're saying, that if he were to have sold his property before the case came to Basin, we would say that Basin would not be collecting from the buyer. But we're saying, why not? In the case of a milveh, you would. Like I say, Tosfos discusses a little bit that maybe there might be reason to distinguish. But okay, the real issue Tosfos says is we discussed before the concept of does the concept of shibud, is that the daraisa or the rabbanon? This whole concept of shibud on land, is that something minat Torah? Which in that case maybe we could say that applies to nezikin as well, or is it maybe only the rabbanon? And then we could draw distinctions. Let's put it this way. If it's Dirabbanan, then the reason would be Shalotino Dela Sikne Loivin, in order to prevent that people should be willing to lend money without worrying that the borrower is going to default. Well, in that case, that wouldn't apply to Nezakin. Then maybe Nezakin would not, the Takanapi. Then you could make that distinction. Whereas if you say it's all Dirabbanan, why should it not apply equally well to Nezakin? So you can't answer that. El proper based in adyotis. Rather, you have to say the Mishnah is given that contradiction. You can't say that's what the Mishnah is coming to teach us, or at least not according to the opinion that Shibuda Doraisa. Rather, proper based in adyotis, the Mishnah is coming to tell us that it has to be a based in a mumchim, a smuchim, not a based in of adyotis. Now, Rashi says that obviously that cannot be referring to the general case of Nezakin with his mammon involved, because those can be decided, those can be adjudicated by any Beis Din, regardless whether they have Smith or Ishmapiyah from Moshe Rabbeinu or not. Rather, Rashi says, we're saying that when it comes to knosses, when it comes to the various types of nezik that are a knaf, you need a Beis Din smuchan. And that's what the Mishnah implies by b'fnei Beis Din, which Tosfos points out. So far, we haven't really been talking about knaf. So far, we've been talking about the ones that are mammon. However, we're going to be talking about knaf in the next line, and therefore the Mishnah can already be starting to introduce that concept that when it comes to knosses, you need Beis Din smuchan. Okay. Then we said our p'edim. We said that it has to be based on the testimony of Edim, which means as opposed to the case, if somebody is liable to a knaf, but there's another thing where the Mishnah is talking about a knaf, but he admits to it before, he admits to it in Beis Din, and he comes and says, for example, let's say, when it comes to an ox goring an eved, where you pay 30 shloim, and that's an example of a knaf, as the Gemara will give us the example soon. So if the guy comes to Beis Din and voluntarily says that my shur killed your Eved, and then later on Edim show up and corroborate that, he would be potter. Means even if Edim come, Tosfos points out, I mean, if Edim never come, how much more so he's potter. But even if Edim come afterwards, we don't say, well, Edim come, we don't depend on his hajah anymore. No, we still say the fact that he admitted at first spares him from having to pay the knaf. The reason is because that's what the Torah that we learn from Sukkim later on in the Sefer, we're going to have a machlokus about this point, as the Gemara is going to point out over here. If he's Moida and no Edim ever show up, that everybody agrees to. Whether he's Potter even if Edim show up later, that is going to be a machlokus. But we learn it from Sukkim later on. Incidentally, the Shalach HaKadosh says an interesting thing. He says that's the value of vidui when it comes to tshuva. When it comes to a person ought to be punished for their avedus, which is a knaf, but if you admit ahead of time, so to speak, before the edim show up in the basin Shamaila and start accusing, then you spare yourself that. Okay. So the problem is, fine, that works out well according to that opinion, that even if edim come afterwards, as long as you admit it ahead of time, you potter, then that would mean alpi edim, our Mishnah says, if it's not based on edim, but rather on your own admission, then you potter. But according to the opinion that you would be chayev in that case, then what are you going to say? What is our Mishnah coming to exclude? You can't say it's coming to exclude the case where he admits and no Edim ever show up.
Isn't that obvious? There's no Edim, he's buttered.
Why? He admitted. He admitted that his shur killed the other guy's Eved.
So
you would think maybe he should be chayev. No, we're saying Moed B'Knaf Potter.
He can admit it, but it doesn't have to be the proof.
You would think Hadas Bal Din Kamei Edim Dami. Him admitting is the equivalent of 100 Edim. We have had that concept before, but we don't say it when it comes to Knaf. We do say it when it comes to Mamon. If he were to say, my shur killed your shur, let's say my shur being a muad, so in order to avoid the issue that we're going to discuss later in the Gemara, whether when it comes to chati nezik, is that a knas or mamon, but let's say he says my shur, which is a muad, killed your shur, he'd be chayev. But we say, because that's mamon, but not knas.
Why not knas?
That's what I'm saying. Later on, later on in the Sefer, we'll talk about psukim.
How do we come to talk about all this in the first place?
Because the Mishnah is saying alpi edim, and we have to figure out what the word alpi edim comes to exclude. So the problem is, according to the opinion that Moedib Knaf, if Edim later on show up, we ignore your Hajjah and we still make you liable, then what is our Mishnah coming to exclude by the words Alpi Edim? You're going to say, Tosfos says that maybe it's coming to exclude the case where you were Moedib and no Edim ever showed up. Fine, but we're going to have a Mishnah later on in the seventh paragraph that's going to tell us so explicitly. And it's not really any longer than our statement over here. So it's not one of those things that you could say, ton of Ahadim HaFadosh, the Mishnah tells it to us in a few brief words over here and then expands on it later. It doesn't really expand on it anymore there either. So therefore, the answer is, according to that opinion, Sefer, Tzirchalei, you're right. According to that opinion, you don't need the words Alpi Edim in and of themselves, because it would be fairly obvious. But the Chiddush is the next word, Bnei Chorin Bnei Bris. That, in other words, according to that opinion, Alpi Edim by itself is not coming to teach us anything. It's rather a whole sense. Alpi Edim, who are Bnei Chorin Bnei Bris? Namely, Bnei Chorin Lamo'ote Avadim. The word Bnei Chorin comes to exclude that Avadim are not kosher for Edus in this. Bnei Bris, the Motor Ovid Gechavim, and the words Bnei Bris come to exclude Goyim. Now, many Mephorish, many Rishonim ask the question, we know in general that Vodim and Goyim are possible Edus, why do we have to specify it over here? Okay, so there's two major answers that the Rishonim give. the Rambam says, when you get down to it, where are these kinds of things, let's say one shur injuring another or whatever, where are they likely to happen? In the stables of Sama. Now, who are the stable hands? Not necessarily Jews, B'nai Chorin. They may well be Goyim, they may well be Avadim. You would think, well, nobody else is available, therefore maybe except their Eidim. No, you don't say that. That's the Rambam's answer. The Rosh gives a different answer, which is that we're going to learn later on, in the Masechta, that if a Goy's ox or other property or whatever injures property belonging to a Jew, that Goy is chayef to pay. And in fact, you don't make the distinction of Tam versus Mord. Regardless whether the Shur is a Tam or a Mord, he's always going to pay Nezek Shalom. You would think then, now, we know when it comes to Dinin Nefoshes of Goyim, a Goy can be punished for any of his Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach based on one aid. So you would think over here maybe the same kind of thing. It could be a Goyish aid, it could be an Eved, or whatever. No, we're saying a Davka has to be two Jews who are Bnei Chorin in order to make him liable to pay. Which leads to
if you don't have those two Jews, then
that's it. He's Potter, yeah. Which leads to an interesting discussion among Achronim. Why? What's the law? The Minchas Chinuch asks the question, what's the logic? You're saying that to execute a Goy for violating one of his Sheva Mitzvahs, one aid and a Goy at that is enough. Here, in order to make him pay money, you need two Jewish aid. What's the logic? There has to be logic to it. Well, there's a couple of answers. One of them is because this whole concept that a Goy should be liable for damages like that is not really part of their Sheva Mitzvahs. It's something, it's based on our dinim. They have a mitzvah to have courts of justice. They don't have a specific thing that they have to have it done a certain way. They could, for example, decide that their laws are, if Pliny's ox injures Pliny, you say, okay, it was an accident, it couldn't be helped, and you pastor him or something to that effect. The fact that we're saying that we want to make you pay and pay Nezek Shalom at that means that we have to go according to Jewish law. Jewish law is you need to aid it. Mashenkin, when it comes to convicting a goy for dinin nefoshes, that's something that's in their system, in Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach itself. You have that they're also to commit adultery or to murder or to steal or what have you. So therefore, if their rules are that they can use one aid, and that's a slightly different answer that's given, I think, by the Chelkas Yoyev, is if their court, there's a difference between whether we're talking in a Goyish court or a Jewish court. If a Goyish court is convicting people who are violating Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, they have the option to say, we're going to accept testimony of one aid, like the American courts do. They don't require two aid. One aid is good enough. But if it's being judged by a Jewish base, then yes, you need two aid. That's the logic. Okay. So the Gemara says with Tzricha. Now we needed to be told both that an Eved is possible and that a Goy is possible. You couldn't have derived one from the other. Diyeshmin and Eved, because if we were only told an Eved is possible, you would say Mishum Dein LaYachas. The difference is an Eved, in a way, is lower down than a Goy. He has no Yichus, as we learned in Kedushin, that he has no Yichus after his father. Amadayim Lachamer. But a Goy is considered to have Yichus. We learned in Yevamos there's a pasuk that actually mentions a Goyish king of Aram and gives him Yichus by his father and his grandfather, from which we learn the halacha that a Goy is Miyuchus after his father and after his father's line. So therefore he's like on a higher level. Amaloy, you would think maybe not. Maybe he should be Koshalaitis. The Iyashmin and Nochri, conversely, if we only told a Goy, you would say Mishum Dovah Shayach Mitzvah. It's fine, but he's not Shayach to mitzvahs at all, except for the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. Abel Eved the Shayach Mitzvahs, but Eved Knani is Chayev in the same mitzvahs that women are Chayev in, so he's Chayev in some of the mitzvahs that Jews are. Emelo, you would think maybe not, maybe he should be Karfaleidos. Tzricha, and therefore we needed both. The Mishnah continued, V'anoshim b'chalal ha-nezek, that women are included in the concept of nezek, which means, in other words, whether the mazik or the nizik was a woman, or a woman's property. The same rules apply. So, Manani Mili, where do we know this from? The Gemara says, Amar Vihod Amar Rav, Chen Tonad Ve Rav Ishmael. We had this in Kedushin, we had this in various other places. Omakra, Isha Ki Yasa Miko Chatos, Ha'odam. There's a passage from this week's parasha, actually. If a man or a woman do any of the averus that a person might do, and they're guilty, then they have to bring their carbon. Therefore, Hishva, Kosov, Ishal, Ishal, Hol, Anshin, Shabbat, Torah. So we see the Torah is equating men and women as far as all the punishments in the Torah. And in general, we learned in Kedushin, women in general are chayiv in all the same lois as men are, with three exceptions that we set there. So, yeah. That's
the exceptions.
The exceptions were that they're allowed to shave their pais, they're allowed to shave their facial hair if they have any, and they're allowed, and if she's the wife or the daughter of a Kohen, she's allowed to become Tomei Mes where her father or her husband is not. That's limud number one. Dvei Rav Elazar Tana, in the yeshiva of Rav Elazar, they taught a different explanation. The pasuk says, Ve'elam ha-shpatim ha-shatosim lefnei hem. The pasuk says, these are the mishpatim that you should place before them. Them meaning including everybody. Therefore, therefore, the Torah is equating men and women as far as all the dinim, as far as all the dinim mominus of the Torah. Oh, they say also another way of learning it is the fact that the Torah starts off ve'elah ha'mishpatim, implying that it's a continuation of the previous part. The previous part is Parshat Yisroel, where the Eibishter tells Moshe, that you should tell both the women and the men about the mitzvahs of the Torah. Therefore, ve'elah mishpatim, and therefore these are the mishpatim that you should place before them, meaning men and women equally. Tosfos discusses, by the way, a little bit the fact that we also use the word lefnehem for a different din. Actually, that we use the word lefnehem to teach us a din that only that you need people who are kosher to judge dinei Torah. We learned this in Gittin. Now women are apostles to judge. Nevertheless, though, Tosfos says, fine, the general rule is only if you're kosher to judge or you're kosher to give testimony. That's true. But the rule is different. I mean, women are possible to judge, and they're also possible to give eders. Nevertheless, though, the actual dinim momentus do apply to them as defendants and plaintiffs. Tosfos, by the way, also brings in the interesting detail over there. What about Devora with the shefetes? She judged the Jewish people. Tosfos answers that was different. Maybe they accepted her because the Shechina, where she was a Nevi'ah, the Shechina rested on her. And they give various other answers, including there may not have been anybody else qualified in that time. And this gets into a whole lively debate among them about the whole issue of women Rabbonim and women passing Halakha and everything. Yeah. I mean, this is one of the sources that's brought to bear on the whole question.
What is the conclusion? It cannot be Rabbonim?
Generally, the rule is that no, but that's not so much because of a matter that they can't judge dinei Torah, although there is that. Again, though, we do have the exception of the Berta, but more because the Torah tells us that when it comes to a king or any other position of authority, it has to be a melech, not a malka, a king, not a queen. So therefore, that establishes more generally that when it comes to positions of authority, it has to be men, not women.
There's never been a queen of Israel?
No, not the halacha. There was Athalia in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, but she seized power illegally. At the time of the second Mishnah, the Shlom Tzion, but she was ruling. Was that accepted by the Chachamim? I don't know. I mean, whatever. La Halacha is supposed to be Dafka a king.
That's because
her husband Yanai had been the king, and then he died, so she took.
No,
him.
Because why?
Because the Torah says Melech v'lo Malka. There's a cousin.
The Torah says Melech. No,
the Torah says Melech and Midarshin, and not v'lo Malka. That means not. So that was limud number two. Dvei Chizkiya v'Rabbi Yosi Aglili Tana, and the Yeshiva of Chizkiya, as well as Rabbi Yosi Aglili, taught a third way of learning it. Omakra, the pasuk says, "V'hemis isha yisha." The pasuk describes when a person's shur kills somebody. It says he killed a man or a woman. Therefore, hishvakas of isha leish l'chol mitzvah shabbat Torah. So we see the Torah is comparing men and women as far as all the things involving mitzvah in the Torah. That in other words, if someone killed whether a man or a woman, he's equally chayav. Or if his shur killed a man or a woman, otherwise it wouldn't have had to say both.
How would it?
It could have said Behemoth Ish, let's say, or it could have said Behemoth Adam or whatever.
And here it says
Isha. Okay, the Gemara says it's three. Now we needed all three limudim. We have three limudim. We have Isha Isha Kiyatu, we have the Elam Shvatim, and we have Behemoth Isha Isha. We need all three of them. Because if we were only told the first one, Isha Isha Kiyasu, which is talking about Averus and punishment, you would say, you would argue that in that case, if the Torah is having Rachmanus on the woman, that she should be able to bring this turban or otherwise get the punishment. That way it'll be kapara for her. Aval dinin, but when it comes to dinin mominus, you would think ish de bar maso matan ein. Maybe it only applies to men who are usually the ones who transact business. Ish aloi, maybe you would argue that women don't usually transact business. Therefore, the Torah did not mean to include them in dinin mominus. Yes. You would think maybe not.
In moments.
Conversely, if the Torah had told us that women are included in dinim, but they're not included in unshin, in punishments for averus. If it had said that way. You'd say, the Torah wants women to be involved, to be subject to dinim momenus, same as men, in order that they should be able to have a chayus, because otherwise, if they're going to have no recourse in Beis Din, people will just take advantage of that. Fine, it's not usual for women to engage in business, but it does happen, and you don't want them to be taken advantage of. They need to make a living. Or if I can, not just they need to make a living. Actually, it actually says the other way around. Tau shi tagri mina. If she's not subject to dinim, nobody's going to want to do business with her because she'll have a free for all. Basically, she'll have a get out of jail free card. Yeah.
No, but really nobody will.
Nobody would want it. That's the point. In case something goes wrong, they won't have any recourse. So therefore, pakeret, you would argue that there's more reason to make her subject to those dinim. Ava kapara, but when it comes to kapara, fakir, you might argue that ishta bar mitzvah ein, a man is subject to mitzvahs. Therefore, it's more logical to say that he should be subject to all the onshin as well. Isha delav bas mitzvah, whereas women are not subject to as many mitzvahs in the first place, because the potter called the mitzvahs as a shazman grama, loy, you would think maybe not. Maybe by the same logic, they shouldn't be liable for punishments for the averis. So far we need those two. The Iyashmin and Hanitati, then if we were told those two limudim, you would say, okay, you would say in each case, you have a logical reason to extend it to women as well. You want them to be able to have kapara for the averis that are relevant to them. You want them to be able to have chayus. You want them to be able, that people will want to do business with them. Avalin in Katola, but when it comes to a sure killing a person, or in general, one person killing another, or whatever, any case of missus, which we said doesn't mean them being chayiv missa, but rather somebody else being chayiv missa, or whatever, for killing them, you would think, still, ishta by mitzvah l'shalem kleifer, a man who is obligated in all the mitzvahs, it's right that the owner of the sure should have to be a kleifer, should have to pay the kleifer to his heirs, because he prevented him from doing mitzvahs. But you would think a woman who is not chayiv in so many mitzvahs, maybe you shouldn't make the owner of the shor pay a kofer in that case, because after all, he didn't deprive her of doing as many mitzvahs. The Iyashmin kofer, conversely, if we were only told that case of kofer, you would say, Mishum de Ikki, Ibn Neshama, the fact is, man or woman, the fact is a life has been lost. Aval Hani Tavti, but in the other cases of Oinshin and Dinim Mominis, Deleka Ibn Neshama, no life has been lost. Maybe it's not as serious as a thing if it applies to women. And therefore we need all three limudim.
You would think that
it's not so serious. So maybe women shouldn't have the onshin, and maybe they shouldn't be involved in the nimam. So now we clarify it by saying that it applies equally to all. The Mishnah had finished off that the Nizik and the Mazik are involved in the payment. Now, what does that mean? Essentially, what it's going to come out meaning is it implies both of them end up losing money. It implies that both of them are ending up losing money in the course of the payment. So, what are we now? How can that be? That must be. Well, how can the Nizik lose money? On the face of it, Mazik is obviously losing money. He's paying for the damage.
Right.
How is the Nizik losing money? On the face of it, we must be talking about a case of Chatzi Nezek, a case where you're only paying half damages. Typically, when you have Keren Tam. So therefore, that leads us into a discussion. Itmar. So now we have a discussion of Amaroyim, which actually we had in Ksubas as well. Talgan Nizka. When we say that you chayev Chatzi Nezek. For Keren when the animal is a tam.
Which
one are you? Okay. Rav Papa Amar Mamoiner, Rav Huna Bredi, Rav Shoma Knosa. Rav Papa says that this half nezek is mamon. It's considered a full monetary payment, which means that we don't apply the rules of knasas to it. For example, we said before moedib knas poter. It would, according to Rav Papa, it would not apply in this case. There's this concept of moedib knas, or this that we said before that you need a beis din smuchim to judge it. According to Rav Papa, neither of those would apply to chatzi nezek. And according and because of mamon. As opposed to according to Rav Yehuda, knas we said is can only be dealt with by beis din smuchin and moedib knas poter. So according to the papa, neither of those applies to this. According to Rav Yehuda, both of them do. That's the point. Rav Papa, amar mamona. Why does he say that chati nezek is mamon kasavar? Because he figures shtam shvarim la b'chaz kashrimu kaiman. Most oxen are not usually considered guarded, meaning your average ox can be considered to be wild enough that you need to guard it or else it's going to go out and gore. Therefore, by right, the owner of this ox, even though it's a tam, really ought to have paid the whole thing. But the Torah has Rachmanas on him. Because first, the shur has not become moored yet. There hasn't been any official warning that this ox is starting to go berserk. Therefore, he wasn't fully at fault, and therefore the Torah exempts him from half the payment that he should have otherwise paid. But the remaining half is mama, as opposed to knas.
The Torah having a minus on one, and she's machmir on the other.
That's fine, but it's machmir on the mazik, because he couldn't have known that his ox is going wild like this. But then we're not getting into that. But the point is that the Torah has Rachmanas on him, but we would nevertheless say whatever is left of the payment is mamon. Same principle as, for example, you know, if Reuven steals $100 from Shimon, and Shimon says, fine, I'm willing to forgive him 50 of it, doesn't mean the other 50 isn't mamon. The other 50 is not a knas. Come on. Rehuna Beredia Vishua Maknasa, whereas Rehuna Beredia Vishua says that it is actually a knas. Because he says the other way around. Most oxen typically are guarded in the sense your average ox is not prone to go out and start goring. So by rights, this ox being a tam, it should be considered so unusual that you shouldn't have to pay at all. It should be like similar like to the case we had yesterday where the wall fell down in the middle of the night and the animal escaped, where you couldn't have reasonably done anything to prevent it. So by rights, you ought to be completely potter. V'rachmona hu dekanse, however, the Torah gives him a knas. The Torah penalizes him by making him pay half. Kiyanchi de linteri la Torah. This way you should know in the future to guard his ox better. So if we take that view, then it's knas. Again, that would mean it can only be done by beis din smuchin. It means that moedib knas would be potter. Okay, however you want to look at it. Okay.
That's the way we see it.
Okay. Now, given this machloikas, now, let's look at the words of our Mishnah and see whether it can be made to fit according to both opinions. We say the Nizik and the Mazik are both involved in the payment, implying, again, it makes it sound like both the Nizik and the Mazik are losing out somehow. So, if you say that the Chati Nezik is Mamon, then there we go. That's how the Nezik is suffering a loss because, like you said, that yes, the Torah is having an Achmonos on the Mazik, but that amounts to taking away something from the Nezik, which by rights he ought to have had. By logic, if we say Palga Nizik Mamona, he ought to have had. Therefore, Nizik is losing half of what he should have gotten. The Mazik is losing half because he's paying for half. Therefore, Nizik by Mazik with a Shlomin. Elo lemandom palganizka knasa. But if you say the chati nezik is knas,
the mazik is not going to cause
a
damage.
Fine, but he's losing in the sense that he has to pay for that damage. He has to pay half of. He's losing because he had $100 before and he doesn't have it now. He's going to have to pay it to the nezik. That's fine. We're not saying that. We're not talking about fault or not. The fact of the matter is, he had $100 in his pocket before, and now he has to take it out and pay it to the Nizik. And the Nizik is also losing because he had a shirt that was worth $200, which now is dead, and he's getting $100, and he's losing $100. But if you take the view that it's a knas, meaning that by right, the Mazik should not have had to pay at all. The Nizik is sort of getting a freebie over here by getting the 100, because by rights he might have ended up with nothing. Then Hashtag the Labdi Day Shokul, he's getting the 100 that he's getting is something that by logical right he shouldn't have gotten according to this way of looking at it. But Tashlumin, he say, where do you find that? He's losing out Tashlumin. Because by no, if we say Palganis to Knasa, it means by rights we should have said that there should be no payment at all. It should be just be considered an act of God, and the Mazik is not liable at all. However, we're making a Knas, and therefore all of a sudden the Nizik is getting 100. That was sort of a freebie. But what do you mean the Tashlumin is say? What do you mean the Tashlumin is say? What do you mean he's involved? What do you mean he loses out when the Tashlumin is given? He's getting 100. That otherwise he would have lost 200. He's getting 100. He's not losing. He's not losing anything. By rights, he would have lost everything.
One scenario, you lose everything, and on the other scenario, you gain everything.
Okay.
It's amazing, depending on how you look at it.
Okay, you're right. Okay. The answer is loymitzrael chasnevela. True, but according to Rav Huna Breda Rishua, what we would say is that when the Mishnah says hanizik ma'mazik v'tashlumin, it's not talking about the question of whether the nizik is losing half the value of the animal or not. It's talking about the pras nevela, the matter that we discussed the other day, that the nevela, the dead animal, belongs to the nizik, and it's his responsibility to go and dispose of it and sell it off or whatever, so they get some money for it. So in that sense, he's involved in Tashlumin, namely that if it starts losing value afterwards, that's on his, that's out of his pocket. Okay, the question is, Tras Nevela Atana Le'Resha? Fine, but we already learned in the previous Mishnah about that concept. We said Tashlumin Nezik Melamed Shabbayla Metapim Nevela. We said that the Mazik has to pay Tashlumin Nezik, implying to fill in the missing value that was caused by the Nezik, implying therefore that you give the Nevela to the Nizik and then add on top of it. You deduct the nevela. You give him the nevela and add on top of it whatever is necessary to get back to the chafi nezik or nezik sholem, in the case maybe. So we already said that. And the answer is chodav atam, chodav amur. True, but one Mishnah is telling us that this applies when the attacking animal was a tam, and one when it was a mur. So you have two different Mishnahs to tell us two different cases. And we need both Mishnahs. We couldn't have learned one from the other. Because if the Mishnah had only told us this concept when it comes to a tam, you would say Mishum Dakati Lo Yai. We would say again, we want to give the Mazik a break. The animal is not yet moored. He had no way of knowing that this animal is all of a sudden becoming dangerous. Therefore, we should give him a break and allow him to take the nevela and use it as part of his payment and let any deterioration of it come out of the nizik's pocket. You would think maybe it was a moored not. He already knew the animal was dangerous. He's not guarding it properly. Maybe we shouldn't allow him to do that. The Eshmin and moored, and conversely, if you only told us by the case of moored, you would say, Mishum to come a shalom kule. Fine, but at least he's paying off the whole thing. At least the Nizik stands to get back everything that he lost, the whole $200 or whatever it is that he lost. So fine, you could argue in that case, fine, let's give him the nevela as part of the 200 as well. He's getting back the whole 200.
Getting chance to damage.
No. When it comes to moored, of course it's not a knas. We're talking about tam. When it comes to a tam, we're discussing whether it's a knas or not. So in the case
we're using.
No. We're saying something else. We're talking about this matter of pras nevela. You could argue the Gemara is saying that when it comes to a moored, what are you saying? You're saying the nevela is worth $20. The Nizik will take that $20, and then on top of it, since the attacking animal was a moored, you're going to have to give him another 180. Nope, at least he's getting back his whole $200. So fine, if it means that he has the hassle of taking a $20 novella and finding a buyer for it before it spoils, fine, not such a big deal. Avol tam emaloi, but by a tam where he's not even getting the full damage, he's only getting half of it anyway. Maybe you would think not. Maybe don't burden him with that as well, where he's only getting back a half of what he lost altogether, but yet you're going to make that. Among that half is going to be the hassle of dealing with the nevela. Tzricha, and therefore we need both mishnayim. Well, it means both. I mean, yeah, right. Okay, yeah, you're right. The hassle of dealing with it, we said, the hassle of schlepping it out of the bird, we said, comes from the magics. But right, I mean the hassle of getting it sold as fast as possible. Right, the hassle of getting it sold as fast as possible before it's spoiled.
You could say the other way around, which is, since already getting on the ark, let's get in the nevela.
The point is, ultimately, that's what we say. Regardless whether it's a half or a whole, either way, he's taking the nevela, and you, the magic, are adding the rest. So you can't prove one way or the other from this Mishnah about this business whether Chafi Nezik is a Knas or Mamon. Toshma, come on.
If it was a Knas, how would it present?
That's what we said. If it was a Knas, it would mean that, for one thing, only a Beis Din Smochim can judge it.
And what else?
And also Moed B'Knas Potter. Those are the two major differences.
Those
are the two major differences.
So that's funny. But, Karen, Tom, and he comes to make this his father to pray.
Yeah. That's if we say Paugan is Kufna. So that's what it means. Yeah. Okay. Tashma, come, let's bring a proof from a Braisa. Ma ben tamlam word. What's the difference? It's the next mission, actually. It's the last mission of our parak, actually. Ma ben tamlam word. Shatam shalom chafti nezek megufoy. The difference is that a tam pays chafti nezek only out of its own body. Meaning, again, as we said, the amount of the chafti nezek is capped at the value of the actual shur. So you have, you know, a $500 shur was killed, so chafti nezek is $250. But the attacking animal is only worth $100. That's all you're going to get is $100. Umuad mashalim nezek shalim min aliyah, and a muad is paying nezek shalim and min aliyah, meaning either aliyah either means the attic, like you have to go up to your attic and start taking out money from there, from your stash, or min aliyah means from the best of your property, because meitav sadehu, whatever it is. So those are the differences: chati nezek versus nezek shalim, and migufoy versus min aliyah. Now v'im isa, if you're going to tell me that another difference is that when it comes to a tam, it's a knas, and when it comes to a muad, it's mamon. Listening nami ha, then it should mention that difference also. The difference whether you're paying up yatmoy or not, whether you're paying based on your own. If you come to Beis Din and say my ox gored, are you going to pay or not? You should say tam ene mashalim up yatmoy muad mashalim up yatmoy. Say that a tam you're not going to pay according to the Hunabre Devashur. You're not going to pay in the case of a tam if you came and admitted in Beis Din. In the case of a muad, you will. The usual answer, ton of a shear. Fine, the Tana didn't bother mentioning all the distinctions in Tam and Board. Again, of course, the question is always, my shear to high shear. Fine, then you have to say he left out at least two things. What's another? The answer is shear chatzi koifer. You could say another thing that was left out is the matter of koifer. If an animal that's a muad kills a person, the Torah tells us you have to pay a koifer. You have to pay a ransom to the heirs of the victim. Again, what that koifer is, whether it's the value of the mazik or the value of the nizik, that we're going to discuss later on in the Masechta. But there is such a thing as koifer.
To the yoshi.
Now, what happens in the case of a tam? Do we say you pay half koifer, just like you pay half nezik?
9:30.
There's two, 9:30 and 9:40. Mine is at 9:40. There's another one at 9:30. Okay, so when it comes to a muad, you're paying koifer. When it comes to a tam, do you pay half koifer? No. So therefore, that's another difference that we could say between tam and muad. Igmar says no, because imishum chati koifer lav shiuru. No, because Hunabre Devashur could argue you can't consider that something that the Mishnah left out, because halmani Rav Yosef Levi. On the contrary, you could argue that this Mishnah goes like Rav Yosef Levi, drama tam mishalom chati koifer. He says that yes, if the animal was a tam, you do pay chati koifer. So therefore, there is no difference in that regard between tam and muad. A tam is paying chafti nezek and also chafti kofer. A muad is paying nezek shalom and also kofer shalom. So you're going to say the only other, and there's a difference of gufa and aliyah. You're going to say the only other difference is the only other difference is that one is a knas and one is mom. And actually, the papa will say this. You could say the Mishnah is like Rabbi Yitzchak Levi. And in fact, the Ravid points out, in a way we would prefer to, because this idea of ton of a shear is kind of a bit of a doicha, because it's a bit of a, you use it when you have to, but it's not the ideal answer. We'd rather say that a Mishnah goes like one kana, like Rav Yitzchak Levi, rather than have to say ton of a shear, especially when apparently the Mishnah is trying to list all the differences in tam and muad. So what are you left with there? Well, you're going to argue then the only other difference is knas versus mamon. Well, a Mishnah is not going to leave out one distinction. Therefore, we have to say there's no such distinction. So therefore, you would have to say then that it means there is no such distinction. Both of them are mamon. Whereas Rav Hunabre Devashur would not accept that. He would say, no, the Mishnah is not like the Yerzeguri. The Mishnah is, in fact, like the Chachamim. And you have two things left out, Knas versus mamon and Kofer versus Knas. Anyway, the point is you can't disprove one. You can't prove one way or the other. Toshma, come, let's try to bring another proof. Later on in the Masechta, we learn a case. Hamis Shurius Pliny. If somebody comes to Beis Din and says my shur killed somebody, or Shurius Pliny, or he comes to Beis Din and says my shur killed somebody's shur, Hadrez Mishalim Apiasmi. Then he has to pay based on his own admission. Now my lav the tam. On the face of it, would that mean that we're talking about a tam? Well, he's paying chati nezek, and in that case, chati nezek would have to be moment, not knas, because otherwise. If it's knas, then you don't accept apiyatmoy. That's the whole distinction. That's one of the distinctions. Okay, the answer is Loiva Mord. No, you don't have to say that. You could assume that the Mishnah there is talking about a Mord. Okay, then the question is, about Tam Mai, so what are you going to argue? Because you don't have to assume the Mishnah is talking about Tam. You could say, Rav Huna Bere de Rishur would answer, the Mishnah there is talking about a Mord. Fine, a Mord, everybody agrees that it's Mammon. You're paying the full damage, there's no question that's Mammon. Okay, then the question becomes, about Tam Mai, so what are you going to tell me that in the case of a Tam, you're going to tell me that Taka, the Mishnah, then would be implying that if the animal were the Tam, you're not paying based on your own admission? Well, if so, let's continue. The Mishnah continues. Adetani Sefer. Look at the next part of the Mishnah continues. If the person comes and says, hey, Miss Shirty, it's Abish, if he says, my shur killed so-and-so's Tevet, where that, there's no question, it's Knaf, because the Torah says a fixed amount that you pay 30 Sloyim, regardless of the value of the Tevet. So then ain mashalom al piyatsmei. Then you don't pay based on your own admission, because that's for sure a knas. If you're gonna say that the Mishnah is trying to distinguish, the Mishnah is trying to tell us that in the case of a muad you would pay on your own admission. In the case of a tam you wouldn't. Then why drag in the case of an ebed? Let it just make a distinction. Let it just make a distinction within the case itself, where you say that my shur killed Pliny's shur or Pliny. Say within that itself, the medvar b'muad, that when is this talking about that you would pay based on your own admission if the animal was a muad? But if it's tam, then you're not going to pay based on your own admission. The Mishnah could have just distinguished within itself whether my shur killed somebody's shur or my shur killed somebody's person. If it's a muad, then you are mashalom apiyatzmai. If it's a tam, you're not. Instead of bringing in a whole unrelated case, we're killed an eved, which is definitely a knas. The answer is kul b'muad kamayri. Okay, you can answer very simple. The Mishnah is b'chlal not dealing with the case of a tam at all. The Mishnah is specifically dealing with the case of a muad, and therefore within a muad itself, the only way to distinguish between mammon and knas is whether it killed a person or a shur, in which case mammon, versus if it killed an eved, in which case it's knas. All we have to say is, according to Rav Huna Bere de Rishur, that the Mishnah is not at all talking about the case of tam. It's true, if the animal were the tam, then also you wouldn't be mishalom al piyatzmei because it's knas, but the Mishnah is not dealing with that matter.
You can say that the Mishnah is talking about a muad.
You can say the Mishnah is only talking about a muad. So the Mishnah wants to tell us the distinctions within the muad itself. Which leads Tosfos to a question. I mean, we just said that only Rabbi Yossi Agrili holds that when we say "Hey, Mishuri is Pliny," "Mishalom al piyatzmei," "Mishalom" in the case of killing a person implies kofer, because you don't otherwise. That's the only payment that's involved. When a shur kills a person, the Torah says the shur itself is put to death, and if it's a muad, then the owner pays a kofer. And we said, according to Rabbi Yossi Agrili, if it's a tam, you also pay half kofer. If that Mishnah doesn't hold like Rabbi Yitzchak Lili, then there's no reason to then of course the Mishnah has no reason to mention a tam, because then there's no mashalim anyway, there's no payment anyway. Okay, Tosfos leaves it as a question. Okay, Toshma, come, let's bring a proof from another Braisa. Zakla, or I think it's a continuation of the same Mishnah actually. Zakla, call him a shalom yosa amasha hizik. Anybody who pays more than what he damaged, edim a shalom apiatzvay, does not pay based on his own admission. So an example of that would be, for example, when a ganef pays double or four or five, those are examples of a knas.
And that means he cannot
pay. And that means that he doesn't pay based on his own admission. If he comes to Beis Din and says, I stole from Pliny, you make him pay the kedron, you don't make him pay the double or four or five.
Okay.
Yeah. So, my lab, hapachos memashe hizik mashalim. Doesn't that seem to imply that if you're paying less, now, and another example of yosa mashe hizik, Rashi says is, for example, the 30 sloyim for an ebed. Your typical ebed is not necessarily worth 30 sloyim. And the Torah fixes the amount 30 sloyim, even if the ebed is worth a couple of prutas.
So therefore, that's
for sure an example of knas. But implying, wouldn't that imply then that if the Mishnah is saying the rule that whenever you pay more than what you damage, then that's called a knas, and therefore any mashalim apiyatmei, the implication is, but if you pay less than what you damage, such as chati nezik, then that would be mammon, and you would pay apiyatmei.
Because
if it's more than that implies, if it's less, it's not a knas. Yes, that seems to be the implication. Well, the answer is not necessarily. Hokamashi hizik mashalim. No, The Mishnah may mean that if you're paying exactly as much as you damage, then that is considered, then that's considered mamon, and then you do it afiyatma. But if it's more or less, and if less, it's also knas. It's also knas, or no, if it's less, if it's equal, then it is mamon. If it's more, then it's knas. If it's less, it's also knas. And if it's equal, then it's
mamon.
But that's what we're arguing, that maybe that, because that's what, according to Rabbeinu Breda Yeshua, chatzi nezek is a knas. This whole point of chatzi nezek by a keren of a tam is a knas. That's what we started saying at the beginning of the sugya. It said, by rights, you ought to be completely potter and just the Torah is penalizing you for not guarding your ox. That would be the definition of a knas. Okay, so then the question is, so what are you telling me then? The implication of the Mishnah is that if you are paying less than the damage, then it is considered a knas, and you don't pay based on your own admission. Then again, you should argue that the Mishnah doesn't have to bring in some other unrelated case. When the Mishnah continues, Adatani, when it continues and says, Zakwal, Kol Mashalim Yoiser, Amasha Hizik, Ene Mashalim Apiasma, when it says anybody who pays more than the damage doesn't pay based on his own admission, Zakwal, why does the Mishnah then say it in such an equivocal way, where then you're not sure what the din is if it's less or equal? Listen, let the Mishnah say more clearly, Zakwal, Kol Sha'ene Mashalim Kim Masha Hizik, anybody who doesn't pay exactly as much as he damaged, which then would equally well imply less or more, and then it would be clear. According to Rav Huna Bredi of Yeshua, that's how the Mishnah should have been played. Okay, therefore it's Yovta. Therefore, therefore we have a clear contradiction. However, nevertheless, the halacha is that the chatzi nezek is considered a knas, like Rav Huna Bredi of Yeshua. What do you mean? Tear up the Behilchata? What do you mean? You slug them up, but the halacha is still like him? How can that be? The answer is A. Yes, because your inference from the words of the Mishnah, there's something that you're missing in there. Kaimamai habit yokta. Why did you argue that you've slugged him up? Mishum the lakatani kemoshe hizik. Because instead of saying yosim amasha hizik, the Mishnah, instead of saying that he didn't pay Kimasha Hizik, the Mishnah used the word Yoster Mimasha Hizik, and you're arguing, therefore, that leaves the question of what happens if it's less open, and why did the Mishnah do that? The reason is it had a very good reason to do that. Leipsikale, because the Mishnah could not say as a blanket statement that any time you're paying not something that's equal to the thing, then automatically it's a knas, because you do have one exception. Because you have the case of chatzi nezek when it comes to pebbles that we talked about early in the perek near the beginning of the sefer, and we'll talk about much more extensively in the first couple of blocks of the next perek. You have the case where an animal, while it's walking, kicks up pebbles, which then go and damage something, and there we said there's chatzi nezek that you pay. Where there's a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that in that case you pay chatzi nezek, and that payment is mamon, even though you're paying less than the damage, that is an exception. Even Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua agrees that is considered mamon. As opposed to Keren, where he argues that it's a knas. Therefore, Mishamachi, like Atani, that is why the Mishnah couldn't have used the expression, if you pay anything other than what you made the hezek, then it's a knas. Because it's not. There is one case where you pay less. So whenever you pay more, there's no question it's a knas. Whenever you pay equal, there's no question it's not a knas. When you pay less, sometimes it can be a knas. It's in the case of Karen. Sometimes
all the time it's a knas except one case.
Well, there's only two standard cases where you're paying less. One is chatzi nezek of Karen, and the other is chatzi nezek of Tzur. We're not counting the 30 of the Eved, because I guess the assumption is your average Eved is worth less than 30 slots. It could be more, could be less, but there's no definitive thing about it. Yes.
Most likely that.
Okay, be that as it may, yeah. I have once seen an interesting thing that archaeologists have found in ancient tablets, like from the times of the Avos and later. They found that in the times of Yosef, the average price of a slave was 20 slave. And sure enough, duly, the Torah tells us that's how much Yosef was sold for. Yeah, they found the document, like Hammurabi's code or whatever, that imply that the average price of a slave in those days was 20 slaves. By the time, 20 shkolim. By the time the Torah was given, a couple hundred years later, after the story of Yosef, they find other tablets that imply that the average price of a slave is 30 shkolim. The price had gone up. So there you go. That is that neatly explains why the difference in the Torah scale, why by Yosef it was 20 and in Parshas Mishpatim it's 30, because inflation is taka reflecting the situation of the respective time. So that inference we wanted to make from the Mishnah against Rav Huna b'Rebbe Yehoshua is not really a valid inference, and therefore the halacha can well be like it. The hashtag amit paugan is k'knasa. So now that we reach the point that we say that chati nezek is considered a knas, therefore we can deduce from that the following halacha: Hai kalba de'ochel imri, if a dog eats lambs, sheep. The shunra de achatanagola, or a calf eats chickens, mishunahu, then that's considered an unusual thing. That's considered a form of keren. It's not normal for them. It's not normal for a dog to eat sheep or a cat to eat chickens. Wait. Therefore, v'lo magvinin b'bavel. Therefore, this is considered keren. Therefore, if the animal is tam, it's only chati nezek, and you can't collect chati nezek in bavel because they don't have smicha over there. Therefore, such cases can't be decided in bavel. The hani mila b'rabrivi. Now, this is only talking about if the animals were large. The sheep, or the Rashi says both the sheep or the tanago. Aval zutri. But if there were small ones, urchihu, then it is normal. That answers your question about the cat and the chicken. If it's a small chicken, yes, a cat may well eat it. But a big chicken, it's not going to happen. And the same thing, and according to Rashi, the same thing with the sheep.
A small sheep, maybe?
Small sheep, yeah. The Rambam actually puts it a little differently. The Rambam maybe had a different view than the Gemara over here. He says if a dog eats any kind of sheep, it's unusual. When it's small sheep, it's usual enough that it would be considered chati nezek. When it's large sheep, it's considered so unusual that, again, it would be like the case of a wall falling down and the owner of the dog is completely potter. I should mention, when we say completely potter in these cases, he is going to be chayev for the fact that the animal did get some nutrition out of it. You're going to be chayev for that. Mash and then, we'll talk about later on in the sixth parak of that concept. But you're not chayev for the full value.
If it was a wolf,
that the wolves are always more. We're not just talking about family. Yeah, we'll see you next mission. The itofas, however, if the nizik grabbed a hold, even in bavel, if the nizik grabbed a hold of property that belongs to the mazik in order to pay off the thing, we don't take it away from him. We allow him to keep what he took as long as it's not more than the value of the debt. Now, does it mean if he collects anything? Tosfos says, Rabbi Natan says in Tosfos that no. If he grabbed the actual dog or cat or what have you that caused the hezek, then fine. Otherwise, not just if he goes and randomly grabs property from the mazik. Otherwise, he could just end up grabbing everything that belongs to the mazik, and you're not going to be able to get it away from him. On the other hand, the shita mekubetzes brings that maybe not necessarily. Yes, even if he grabbed other things, fine. Ultimately, it's going to come to Beis Din, and they're going to figure out the actual amount of the damage and make him return anything extra. The e'omer kivuli zimna dalzilna la'adistro. What if the nizik says, fine, we can't decide such cases in bavel. However, I want you, the Beis Din, to arrange an appointment for me with the mazik that we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael and have the case judged there. Come in, mate. We set up such a thing, and we make the mazik go with him to Eretz Yisrael to have the case judged. The Eloi Ozil. Maybe not. Depends. Maybe not. The Eloi Ozil, and if this mazik is not willing to go to Eretz Yisrael, Misham Tinin, like, we'll put him in Chayrim. And actually, the Gemara says, Bain kach, Misham Tinin, like, Adam Masalik Hazeka. Actually, in between, anyway, right away, this person who had this dangerous dog or cat, we put him in Chayrim right away, anyway, Adam Masalik Hazeka, until he gets rid of that animal, which is a mazik.
We don't kill the animal.
Maybe we, no, necessarily, but he has to get rid of it somehow. However, he gets rid of it, that's his.
Kill, right?
What?
Rashi says to kill.
Yeah, you're right. Larga to kelag v'sachoso. Yeah, Adam Masalik Hazeka Shiyagim. Yeah, he's responsible for killing them. Midir Rav Nosson. This is based on what Rav Nosson said. Tanir Rav Nosson. Minayin shle yigadol adam kelag rabasefe. How do we know a person is not allowed to raise a bad dog, meaning a mean dog that barks and scares people, in his house? Or he's not allowed to leave a rickety ladder standing in his house, which people may climb up and fall and hurt and get hurt. Tamad Laima, the pasuk says, don't allow there to be blood in your house. I'm talking about the mitzvah of Micah, but it applies more generally to having hazards around your house. So therefore, if he has this hazardous creature, then we put him in chayrim until he gets rid of it by killing it. Snakes, we'll see in the next Mishnah, actually, are always moored.
Always
moored. Again, we're talking about here about time. But, yeah. There is an interesting thing. The Gaonim, by the time of the Gaonim, this difference between Eretz Yisrael and Babel didn't exist anymore. They didn't have smicha in Eretz Yisrael either. So the Gaonim, many of the Gaonim discuss the matter that what happens is, because when it comes to Dinei Knossos, we don't have the ability to judge them anywhere in the world now, because nobody has smicha. Therefore, what we do is a little bit differently than our Gemara. We put the guy in Chayrim until he pays a fair compensation, until he pays a fair compensation to the Nizik. He may not have to pay the whole thing, and it may be the Nizik is still mad at him or whatever, but as long as he pays a reasonable amount towards the Hezek, then we'll take him out of
it.
In the case of Knat, even in the case of Chati Nezek, for example. So again, you're not going to make him pay more than half Nezek, or in the other cases of Knat, similarly, but we will put him in Chayrim until he does something to appease the Nizik, pay him as Mechila, whatever it is. Mishnah says, we'll do the Mishnah, we'll probably leave the Gemara for tomorrow. Chamisha tamen v'chamisha muadin. There are five cases of animals that are tam and five that are muad. Number one, habehema enimu edes loy ligach, loy ligach, loy lishach, loy lubach, loy lubach. An animal, the five tamen are an animal does not start out as muad to gore or to push another animal or to bite or to lay on things deliberately in order to break them or to kick. So if it does any of these things, then you can say the first couple of times it's a tam, and only after that does it become a muad.
Isn't that obvious?
No, we. How do? What do you mean? How do we know it? We haven't had that concept until now. Here's where we're introducing it. On the other hand, so those are the five tams. What are the five muadim? Number one, hashen muadis lechelos aroyla. Shane, the teeth of an animal are muad to eat what's appropriate to it, meaning produce, grain, fruit, whatever, as opposed to things that it doesn't usually eat. There we'll talk about those are considered a form of keter. But fruit and vegetables or whatever, things of that nature, it's muad to begin with. And therefore, as we said the other day, it's in the reshus of the nizik. What?
Because of the value of it?
No, because it's normal for an animal to eat. It's normal for an animal to eat. So you can't say there's time the first couple of times you couldn't have expected it. You always have to expect that an animal is going to eat what's available to it. Number two, haregel mu'edes lishba b'derech hilucha. The foot of an animal is mu'ed to damage things in the normal way of walking. So kicking, again, we just said, is part of caring. But if it walks along in the normal way and accidentally bangs its foot into something and breaks it, that's mu'ed for to begin with. And again, therefore, if it's in Rishus HaNizik, as we discussed yesterday, Rishus HaNizik Lamazik, there's a whole discussion over there, then he'll be chayiv right away, Nezik Shalit. That number three is a shor amud. Number three is a shor which became muad for any of the five things. Is the third case of muad. Number four, the shor amazik v'shus hanizik. The fourth case is an ox which causes damage in the property of the nizik. And the Gemara is going to explain that that's according to the Taufin that we mentioned yesterday, that the Taufin doesn't make the distinction between tam and muad when it comes to v'shus hanizik. And number five, the adam. And number five is a person is always muad. Adam muad la'olam, as we'll learn at the end of the next thing.
If he doesn't have
daft, that's different. We're talking about a person who has daft, even when he's sleeping. We learned at the beginning of the Masechta that even Yoshin, even he's sleeping, if he causes damage while he's sleeping, he's still chayev. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Hazev, wolves, so that answers your question. Vahari, a lion. Vahadoiv, a bear. Vahanomer, or a leopard. Wait. Bardless or bardless. There's a few different possibilities. We'll talk about more in the Gemara tomorrow what a bardless is. Rashi translates it as an animal like a ferret or a skunk or something of that sort. Not really a skunk, they're native to America, but whatever, some similar creature to that. There's other possibilities. The Gemara is going to, we'll talk about other possibilities in the Gemara tomorrow about that maybe it's a leopard, maybe it's a hyena, maybe it's I think I've even seen somebody wants to explain that it's a turtle. A snapping turtle.
What's a snapping turtle? Turtles
that snap at anything that's there. So therefore, they are v'hanochosh and a snake, harel mu'adin. They're all mu'ad to begin with. In fact, the Gemara is going to ask, then you have six more mu'adin. Why did we start by saying there's only five mu'adin according to this? There's 11 mu'adin.
Number one. Number two, why do you need all these animals? They're all the same.
They're all wild animals.
Right.
Yeah, well, Rav Elazar says, no, b'zman shein b'nei tavus ein mu'adin, it depends. If these animals are tamed, then they're not mu'ad. Only, b'hanachash mu'ad la'ad. According to him, only a snake is always mu'ad. That a snake can never be fully tamed. According to him, all the other ones, the wolf, the lion, etc. We'll talk about tomorrow. We'll talk about tomorrow in the Gemara. But according to Rav Elazar, yes.
Has to be especially he knew the language of the animal.
Come on, no. But according to him, you're able. I mean, we may as well mention actually the Chachamim obviously disagree with him because they listed the lion among the one that's always bored. There's an interesting sicha where the Rebbe talks about in Bilam's bracha to the Jewish people. He compares them a couple of times to a lion. They rise up like a lion and stop them, etc. Why if it's the comparison to a lion? That ever says, based on this Mishnah and the accompanying Gemara, meaning, in other words, a lion has a certain natural wild tendency. You may tame it for many years, but all of a sudden, one day, that taming will be completely thrown off and it will revert to its original state. The same thing in Yid. Maybe for many years, he has nothing to do with Yiddishkeit or whatever, but all of a sudden, it'll flare up out of nowhere, like a lion all of a sudden. What about a bear? I mean, we mentioned a bear here also, but a lion is like the ultimate example of that.